Something happened to me in the summer of 1976 that had never happened to me before and has never happened to me since. It occurred during the week of our summer football camp, just as I was about to start my senior year in high school. The tradition was for our football team to have our summer camp practices during the hottest week in August. And we lived on campus in cabins that were built in the 1600s. No air conditioning, of course. We practiced three times a day, a practice in the morning, and then again in the early afternoon, and one in the late afternoon. You get high school boys doing that three times a day, wearing the same football pants and jerseys, no washer and dryer. You can imagine how wonderful those cabins smelled. Fortunately, all of us had layers of Bengay on us for all of the aches and pains and sore muscles, so that kind of helped with the aroma. It was Thursday, and we had just finished our third and final practice of the day. We were slowly walking back to our cabins, exhausted, but happy that we only had one more day of camp left. And as I was walking, my right leg suddenly felt as though it had been bitten by a shark. I mean, it hurt. Hurt so bad that I stopped. I couldn't walk. And then another shark jumped up and bit my left leg. I had had cramps before, but never anything like this. Never two cramps at the same time. Then a cramp took hold of my right calf. And then the left calf. No longer able to use my legs. No longer able to stand. I fell backwards. And right after falling to the ground, my right shoulder and right arms cramped. And then my left shoulder and left arm, it was unbelievable. Even my neck cramped. I could not move one single muscle. I couldn't even turn my head from side to side. I was paralyzed, powerless, not able to move any part of my body. My teammates yelled out, "Hester is down! Hester is down!" The coaches ran over to me and started spooning Gatorade to me and telling me to drink. And what happened next was just unbelievable to me. It was like one of those miracle healings you read about in the Bible. As I sipped the Gatorade, the cramps started dissipating, instantly leaving one by one. The muscles that had been so tight were loosening and now free. Just like that, I was back to normal, ready for next day's practice. I said to the coaches, "Thank goodness for Gatorade. I didn't know it was so powerful." They said it wasn't the Gatorade. It was the salt we added to it. A proper amount of sodium chloride is essential for life. Salt is called the fifth element because we are dependent on it as we are air, earth, water, and fire. We have to have it in order to live and in order to move. Hope you can see this white thing sitting up here by the altar rail. If you're not a country person or a farm boy or girl, you may not know that that's called a salt lick. You usually don't see one in church. You usually see one in a field or a barn. Farmers put salt licks out in the pasture so they can be licked by their cows or horses or sheep. These 50-pound blocks of salt are licked by Elsie and Secretariat so their salt levels don't get too low. Of course, salt is not only necessary for being able to live and to move, it helps things taste better, doesn't it? It enhances things. Jesus tells his disciples that you are the salt of the earth. That you and I are to go out into the world to make a difference, to bring it life, to enhance it. And then he says, if you are not being salt, if you are not enhancing things, not making things better, you might as well be tossed out and trampled upon. Perhaps he uses such strong language, not only because he knows the world is hurting and needs people to do things to make it a better place, but perhaps he also says it because he knows that being salt is good for us. Saltiness is in our DNA. We were created to be salt. If we don't fulfill our purpose, if we don't serve and help others, if we become saltless, we are not our true selves. Life becomes stale. Life loses its flavor. And then Jesus tells people how to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. It's that same passage. He says, follow the law of Moses. Obey the Ten Commandments. Now, that may surprise you. When we think of the law in the Bible, we sometimes think of the burden of the law, or we think of those scribes and Pharisees that Jesus would get so upset with, and we sometimes think that Jesus came to do away with all that. Not true. Jesus was Jewish. He was raised with the law. He studied the law, and he believed in the law. He said, I come not to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. To make sure it happens. In fact, he says, the law has a lot to do with the fulfillment of bringing God's kingdom on earth. So what is the law? Well, that's a big question, of course. It got so big. But let's simplify it with the Ten Commandments. And let's simplify the Ten Commandments by realizing it has two different emphases. Four of the ten have to do with our relationship with God. The other six commandments have to do with our relationship with people. And as you recall, Jesus said that all the law can be boiled down to two commandments. Love God, love neighbor, love people. That's how you be salt. That's how you bring life to the world. That's how you enhance it. And that's how you enhance and bring life to yourself. In the 18th century England, that country was in big trouble. Children were being abused in workhouses. The poor and people in the lower class were being oppressed, thrown into prison, debtor's prison. England was on the verge of having a revolution, much like the uprising that was in France. But the founder of our denomination, John Wesley, and those in his ministry fought for the rights of the oppressed, fought for the rights of the poor. He spent time at prisons, and he encouraged other Christians to do likewise. He got a hold of an old ammunition warehouse and turned it into a combination of the Salvation Army, Goodwill Industries, and the night shelter. And from 1739 to 1778, Wesley ministered to the people of London at this place called the Foundry. And if you've been to the coffee shop down the road from us called the Foundry, that's why Kevin called it the Foundry. It's named after this place John started in London. Historians openly credit John Wesley and the Wesleyan Revival revival in England for bettering society and for preventing a revolution. That's some pretty good taste in salt. See, you can't be salt unless you're involved, unless you're connecting with other people, getting involved in their lives. You hear a lot of talk these days about religious versus spiritual. It's kind of sexy these days to be spiritual but not religious. And one reason for that is because a lot of people think of religion as being something that that has a bunch of rules, a bunch of things you have to believe, and indeed, unfortunately, a great many people have presented religion that way. But that's not the true meaning of religion. The root of the word religion, if you go to the Latin, the root is community. It's about connecting with others. It's a community where we strive to worship God and love others. Even though we have our differences, we try to be salt. In fact, if we can model being a place where people who are different and believe different things and think different things can get along together, then we are being the best kind of salt we can be. It's what the world needs. Now, that kind of community is not the popular thing in our society, where it tends to be about the individual, where it's all about me. I don't know if you're familiar with a woman pastor named Lillian Daniel. She's got some good stuff, and she wrote a great article which points out this dynamic. Reverend Lillian Daniel writes, "On airplanes, I dread the conversation with the person who finds out I am a minister and wants to use the flight time to explain to me that he is spiritual but not religious. Such a person will always share this as if it is some kind of daring insight, unique only to him, bold in its rebellion against the religious status quo. Next thing you know, he's telling me that he finds God in the sunsets. These people always find God in the sunsets. And in walks on the beach. Sometimes I think these people never leave the beach or the mountains. What with all the communing with God they do on hilltops, hiking trails, and did I mention the beach at sunset yet? Like people who go to church don't see God in the sunset. Like we are these monastic little hermits who never leave the church building. How lucky we are to have these people inform us that God is in nature, as if we don't hear that in the Psalms or in the creation stories and throughout our deep tradition. Being privately spiritual but not religious just doesn't interest me. There is nothing challenging about having deep thoughts all by oneself. What is interesting is doing this work in community, where other people might call you on stuff or, heaven forbid, disagree with you. Where life with God gets rich and provocative is when you dig deeply into a tradition that you did not invent all for yourself. Thank you for sharing, spiritual but not religious sunset person. You are now comfortably in the norm for self-centered American culture, right smack in the bland majority of people who find ancient religions dull but find themselves uniquely fascinating. Can I switch seats now and sit next to someone who has been shaped by a mighty cloud of witnesses instead? Can I spend my time talking to someone brave enough to encounter God in a real human community? Because, you see, when this flight gets choppy, that's who I want by my side, holding my hand, saying, saying a prayer and simply putting up with me, just like we try to do in church. Wow. That's what we're trying to do and be here at Asbury, the Assault Factory, I guess. Encouraging each other to love God and other people. And encouraging you to make a difference in whatever unique way you can. There was a man here at Asbury, a member of our church, named Ed Grandy. Ed passed away on September 11th, 2005, 11 years ago. He was 57. He had been attending Asbury less than a year. Not many people knew him. He worked at night at the Exchange on River Street. So Ed couldn't be involved with our evening programs, no Wednesday night suppers or small groups or the choir. Back then, we didn't have small group opportunities during the day like we have now. Ed was single. He sat alone in the back of the sanctuary. He was tall and he had this great big black beard. He kind of looked intimidating, but he had a gentle heart. And he often tried to be soft. I remember there was one time Ed heard about a girl who was going to drop out of high school. When he heard about the situation, Ed offered to pay for the girl's class senior trip and for her senior pictures if she would stay in school. He wanted to do this anonymously. And when the girl heard about the offer, she agreed to stay in school. She ended up graduating and was forever grateful. No one knew who had done this for her until after Ed's death. When Claudette DeLong's husband, Bobby, suddenly passed away, we wanted to have a meal at the church for Claudette's family and all the relatives after the funeral. This was before Claudette was full-time staff here. It was before we had a kitchen hospitality team to help us in these situations. Back then, we had very few people who were retired. So trying to have a special luncheon during a weekday was difficult for us. Most of our members had 9-to-5 jobs. But Ed heard about the need. He didn't know Bobby, didn't know his family. But since he had a night job, he figured he could help. And so Ed worked in the kitchen. I looked in there and saw Ed surrounded by several women. This big, tall man with his big black beard, working hard so that Bobby's family could have a special meal together during this difficult time for them. And so you see, even though Ed was single and lived by himself, he became part of a community. He got involved. He connected so he could make a difference, so he could be salt. Back in the 1990s, I would sometimes be asked to be the song leader at the Effingham County Camp Meeting, which is one of the oldest Christian campgrounds in the country. There was an elderly blind man there named Howard, and he'd be there every year. And every year, he'd ask me to sing an old hymn called "Then Jesus Came." The song is about all the wonderful things Jesus did to help people, helping them, healing them, serving them. The chorus, the words to the chorus are, "When Jesus comes, the tempter's power is broken. When Jesus comes, the tears are wiped away. He takes the gloom and fills the life with glory. For all is changed when Jesus comes to stay." I used to think that Howard liked that song because he knows that one day he will be with Jesus and Jesus will help him, will heal him. But perhaps Howard liked the song because he knew that the same Spirit that dwelt in Jesus dwelt in him. That Jesus wanted people to follow in his footsteps. So instead of it being when Jesus comes, we say Jesus has already come and he has showed us how to live and what to do. We are to be the body of Christ. We are to be the hands and the feet of Jesus. When you come, the tempter's power is broken. When you come, the tears are wiped away. You take the gloom and fill the life with glory, for all is changed when you and I come to stay. When we want to make a difference. Now, I've been a long proponent of the benefits people receive from not only hearing a message, but interacting with it in some way also. So, you know what I mean. I think sometimes we use art here or drawing to help us with this. Sometimes we've had you come forward to take a stone out of water to remember your baptism. We do these things periodically. This both gets the left brain and the right brain involved. And so educators tell us this holistic approach can be very helpful and meaningful to people. So I thought what we would do today is I'd invite you, when you feel led, to come forward and take a lick from the song. You laugh. I am just kidding. I realize that wouldn't be a good idea when I discovered it was a used song. So we will skip the interactive part of the sermon today. Just be salt. Remember, the S in salt is for service. Jesus said to serve others as he had served. A is for action. Being salt does not mean you have to say anything. It's about doing something, taking action. St. Francis said, preach Jesus, and when necessary, use words. L is for love. The guiding principle of being salt is loving others. T is for tolerance. Not tolerance for injustice or tolerance for abusive situations. By no means. It's tolerance for those who look and think differently than us. It's respecting each other, even though we may disagree. Salt. Service. Action. Love. Tolerance. The world needs it. And friends, you need it too. We all need it, because salt can be very healing. When I have an ache or a pain or a scrape or the shingles, you know what I love to do is try to get down to Tybee Island, try to get in that ocean, because the salt water helps the healing process. Being salt is healing. There is nothing better for depression. There is nothing better to lift your spirits. Nothing better to heal you than being salt. So go forth to be healing salt. Go forth to be a savory salt. Go forth to make a difference in this world. Go forth to be the salt of the earth. Amen.